In this episode, my friend Amber Bishop sits down with us. We have a lovely conversation covering the infinite banking concept within family finance, within business, real estate development, and investing, and missionary work. She's salt of the earth people, and I had fun. I think you'll enjoy. Thanks for listening. Welcome to the Bank of Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery. And today I have a lovely lady, a friend and a client, and as a guest. And thank you, Amber, for making the time to come and share with us today. You know, I think that you're really going to enjoy this because of who she is and what they've done and what they're doing. And so thank you, Amber. And tell us a little bit about yourself, if you don't mind, please.
Hey, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks. My name is Amber Bishop. I am married with three young adult children. My husband and I work and are partners in our family business. And I own several other of my own personal businesses. And we also run a nonprofit that is working to train leaders and plant churches around the world. So I have multiple different things happening at lots of different times in many different ways. So I feel like I'm riding a chariot and I have four horses and I'm constantly looking to see where I need to guide and direct. But and Nelson is one of my heroes, and it's really a fun story to hear how we're here today talking on this podcast.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You're busy. You have something going on all the time. You got to be doing something, so you might as well be enjoying family and, you know, active in your businesses, right. You know, yeah. Providing service. So, tell me if you don't mind, cause I think that we met along about 2001-ish. Can you share with us how you even came to be exposed to the idea that you could become your own banker and this infinite banking concept?
Essentially, in my early 30s, I started having a really strong conviction from the Lord that I needed to be very wise with money. And there's a verse in the Bible that talks about a wise man saves up and stewards inheritance to his children's children. And it says, but the wealth of the wicked is given to the righteous. And so right there is this entire concept right in scripture. And I was really beginning to be drawn to the idea of learning how to make money work for me, learning how to see money multiply, and understanding that God could actually give me the wisdom to do that, that it wasn't that I needed to wait for a W-2 kind of income consistently, but that I could be looking for opportunities to see money multiply. So this kind of started in my mid-30s. And also at that time, I was getting a very strong conviction of making sure we were stewarding money properly in regards to tithes and offerings. So all of these things were kind of rolling into one idea in my heart and in my mind. And I was working on beginning to work with real estate. I've never been drawn to the stock market. It just seems like a crazy system of ups and downs and ins and outs. And it just was never appealing to me. But real estate, I'm a licensed contractor. And that was something I felt like I could get my hands around. It's a long game. You know, you can put money into land and let it sit for a long time and it will eventually grow and those types of things. And I was using kind of first position HELOCs as a way to capitalize money in a sense.
Well, where did you go to learn that? Were you active in real estate groups or?
No.
You know?
I prayed and I asked God. So this is one of the things that one of my consistent prayers is I'm constantly asking God to bring me wise guides. And I'm constantly asking God to teach me how money works in the natural realm and in the supernatural realm. So I'm learning at real time what's the best protocol to move forward in those things. And I only do what I hear the Lord saying. So that's why I'm sitting here with you. That's why this concept is so powerful, because it's something that God's people can use to really build a legacy. That's what this is about for me. It's about legacy, freedom and legacy.
Right. And I didn't mean to interrupt you, but so you pray and ask for wisdom and People of wisdom that have wisdom about money and cash flows and
Right. And so I had been exposed to this idea of first position HELOC, kind of accelerated banking in that sense. And I heard the name Nelson Nash and it intrigued me. And so I like to, some people collect all sorts of different things. I collect heroes. And so when I heard his name, I thought, oh, that's interesting. I want to learn about that because, if you want to be growing in wisdom, you need to be a lifelong learner. So I was working on finding Nelson, and I somehow found, I guess it's a documentary that was done that he did towards the end of his life with his organization. And I watched this documentary with him, and within 5 or 6 minutes of him speaking, I just started crying because I knew he was wise, and I knew he had a key about how money worked that I needed to understand. And so I watched that documentary many times, trying to get my brain about how this works, because it's not necessarily fully intuitive if you haven't been trained in economics, if you haven't been trained in how money works, if you don't understand that being a banker is actually a profitable business. So it takes a minute for you to get all of those concepts rolling in your mind. And then once you get it, it's like all systems go. It's off to the races. So, but it was really important to me when I watched this documentary because, again, I'm trying to vet everything to make sure that I'm working with the right people, because there's all sorts of, my work phone is just going crazy right now, James.
It's because you're busy.
Yeah. Sorry. So I started interviewing some people. So the way it works in my family is I'll come up with an idea and I will kind of run through the paces with it. I will come up with the plan and then I present it to my husband and he pokes holes in it and sees yes, no, maybe, let's go for it, those types of things. And so he just gives me a lot of leeway to do that. And then I come up with the full package and then we sit down and we talk about it. And then he will either sign off or say, that doesn't have enough for me to feel comfortable with that, go back and find some more things. And so that's kind of how we work in our relationship.
I love that.
And so, I'm very blessed because he trusts me with a lot. And I'm grateful he does. So essentially, I started interviewing people around this idea. And I'm still working on building my development. I'm working on real estate. I'm building assets in those ways. And I'm starting to interview people around this concept of infinite banking, right?
Well, how did you do that? How did you find them?
I don't know. I think I did Google searches, really. And I think I interviewed like 3 people. But I was very clear with God. I said, God, if this is something that you want me to do, it has to be somebody who knew Nelson. It can't just be anybody. They have to know Nelson and they have to love God. Because those things are foundational to anybody I'm going to be doing business with, anybody that I'm going to be learning from. I need to trust that the source and the information that they're giving me is vetted, right? So these other 3 people didn't hit any of those marks. So I kind of put the idea away. I'm like, well,
they didn't hit either one of them? It's like No.
Like the first one, I was like, no, okay. I could tell I knew more about economics than this guy did. The second guy, it was just, he was not passionate about it. He wasn't passionate about the freedom that this gives you and the power and the legacy this could build. It was just basically he was selling a product. Yeah. And then the third guy just didn't even know enough to even tell me. And I didn't even know enough then that you had to structure a policy correctly. I knew enough, but he was trying to sell me a product that I knew wasn't the right way that Nelson would have done it. And so I'm like, none of these guys work. And so I just went on my way. And I let that sit for about 5 or 6 months. And my husband and I and 2 friends of ours, we were on a walk in the mountains. And so I just asked the question, I'm like, if you had $100,000 today and you could invest it anywhere, where would you invest it? So everyone was thinking for a minute. And my husband comes back and he says, I would do whole life. And that was my cue because I put it all to bed and he brought it back again. And so I said, okay, Lord, then it has to be somebody who knew Nelson and loves God. And then that day, literally, I think I probably Googled somebody who knew Nelson and loves God. I'm not sure how I found you, but you came forward And I had my little interview with Julie, and I just, you know, I don't have time to play around. I just went right for it. And and she, I think she's the one who told me that you were Nelson's first agent.
Well, is that right? I'm the first, you know, agent individual to go through the practitioners program. So,
okay.
You know, go to the practitioners program. My little number there is 001. So,
yes. Yeah.
But I had hung out and known Nelson 5 or 6 years prior to the Nelson Nash Institute being created.
But, yes.
So,
yeah. So, okay, keep going. Those wickets were hit, and I had the green light from my husband, and I felt like this was a way that the Lord was leading, because we wanted to diversify and not just have everything be land banking. And then I love the idea of legacy, and I love the idea of preparing for a generation I'm not going to really see, you know, and that's the fun of it, right?
That, and so all that was in 2020.
Yeah, maybe that was even like 2019, James, really, 2018, 2019, where all that stuff is working along in my heart and my mind.
Yeah, I got it.
I don't know. What are we, like 4 years in now, I think?
Well, this is 2025, so we met either in, you know, 2020 or 2021, I think. And I should know, and I can go look, and right. I promise you I have notes on all of our phone calls, you know.
Yes. So
I don't forget.
Well, it's so funny, because once you get this set up, it's kind of like set it and forget it. You just keep capitalizing, and then you have your loan payments on automatic, and you're the bank. You're just moving along.
Well, I'm with you, and I agree with that. The premium, you know, if the policy structured correctly, and the client understands what they have and why they have it and why it's built the way it is, and here's the premium amount, and here's what you can do and what you can't do with the premium. And then, you know, if you make loans, then of course you shouldn't make loans without a loan repayment, right? Whether
right.
it's methodically
right.
monthly, or if you're doing flips, it's going to be in 6 months or 9 months and, or 3 months or whatever it is. But there should be a clear cut way that the loan is going to be repaid. Those are right. very simple, you know, in my mind. So yeah. I agree with you.
It's a system you would use just like the bank. You're just the bank. And the thing that I love about this, it just hit me one day. I'm like, oh man, you are rewarded in this system for two things, for saving and for paying off debt. You are rewarded for that.
The legacy is built in.
And the world doesn't reward you. See, this is how you know the kingdom of darkness and the kingdom of light, right? In the kingdom of light, you get rewarded for things. In the kingdom of darkness, you don't. And so this is just, to me, it just is such a beautiful system that you can build. And now, you know, my son's getting married this summer, so we're preparing to bring his new wife into the family bank. You know, I have plans already in my mind of how we'll onboard grandchildren and all of those things. And of course, I'm just following Nelson's playbook, and Nelson got it from the Lord. So it's brilliant. Oh, my husband might walk in for lunch.
Oh, perfect. Maybe he'll say hi. Okay, so can I ask, you know, to the extent that you're comfortable, you know,
sure.
what y'all have done or what you're doing, you know, I get the legacy and it's important, and congratulations on your sons and your new, you know, soon to be daughter-in-law. And I get that legacy is important. There's no question. And I agree, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, not because I believe it, because it's, you know, written in the Bible and it's truth. So, you know, with life insurance, and you're managing your cash flows, and you're using your policies with everything that you were going to do anyway, whether it's finance,
right.
a car, education, vacation, whatever it is. And then if you're honestly, you know, repaying those loans, there's going to be some time in the future that you may want to change the way you enjoy income, right? Passive income time. And whenever, even after you do that, right? So you built policies, or one could build policies and do everything that they were going to do anyway. They get into passive income. Passive income time. They enjoy tax-free, tax-favored income. There's still a net death benefit if you're taking the income through withdrawals, or you're taking the income through loans, or you're doing both. There's still a net death benefit, you know, and you have one generation now, you have several children, and then here, which is a natural order of things. Your son's going to get married, you know, they fall in love, they're going to get married, they're going to have children, and then that's a third generation. And then when you incorporate them, then you're talking about and actively doing something for the fourth and fifth generation.
Exactly.
I mean, that's right, so now I'm powerful.
And I'm trying to think through how to make sure my children are well trained, right? So that when I check out, they understand how to keep things moving down the line. I think too, when you're in business, so what we've used our policies for, a couple of different things. For the kids, they have financed their cars through their policy. Well, my sons have. And then my daughter will, she is just getting ready to do that next month. And so those are things where that's the first kind of easiest way to get started for them, to just have that car be their first way of recapitalizing back their policies. And then for me, I've used our policies for larger real estate development, land purchasing, things where I was doing a new build and needed to have some capital to begin that project, knowing that that project was going to sell, and then I'd harvest that money back, pay back the loan, and then keep moving. So those are also things that I'm using the policy for in business.
So did you do that through 2019, 2020, through COVID and all that?
Yeah.
Okay. And then I want you to be comfortable. I don't want you to share anything that you don't want to share. I don't want that at all. But you, development, so you purchased real estate and developed it and then sold it.
Right.
So do y'all do buy and holds, or is that what y'all do? Y'all develop and sell? Is that y'all's primary?
I do any and all. I have bought and held. I do short-term rentals. I do have a long-term rental. I kind of have a mix of those. I'm developing a small community of luxury Airbnbs in North Georgia in the mountains. So those are things where I'm working in conjunction with a builder up there. And some of those I'm keeping in my portfolio. Others of those I'm selling, you know, on the market, out in the market. So yeah, whatever. That's what I love about this, is you just have to be prepared for whatever comes along. I don't know what's coming along. I just am waiting for the opportunity. And when I see something, and if the numbers make sense, then we go for it.
Has having access to capital changed the way an opportunity looks, or has it changed the way or modified the way that you vet an opportunity? Has there been any impact? You know, because you have access to this capital, so here's an opportunity. And because you have access to the capital, it may have changed what you determined to be an opportunity, or...
It just makes life easier, because you're not having to go to the stinking bank and give them 100 million pieces of information. You just can do the deal, you know?
Yeah, I got you. I got you. And so can we talk about the other things that y'all do?
Sure.
As far as, you know, that's for profit, and I'm a capitalist, you're a capitalist. But y'all are also very active in the nonprofit world.
Yes.
So, care to share anything on that? Perfect. This is powerful.
This is the fun of this whole thing, because when I understood what this could do, I thought, oh my goodness, why would I not do this in the nonprofit? Because, so let me back up. I collect heroes. So another one of my heroes is Gordon Cosby. Gordon Cosby planted a fairly small church by, you know, everyone's standards today in DC in the 60s. And he developed this amazing community of faith and did all of these amazing things, planted probably 40 nonprofits out of his church, and was able to radically change kind of the face of DC in a time when it really needed God's people to rise up and do radical things to help the poor and the suffering. So he's one of my heroes. I love his story. And on his deathbed, he was able to transition several millions of dollars of money from his nonprofits and put them in exact places where he wanted to see new life, new expressions of God's goodness rise up after he graduated. And I thought, when I heard that story, I thought, I want to be like him. I want to be able to say that on my deathbed, I'm positioning millions of dollars to continue God's work after I graduate. Like, I want that on my bucket list. So when we finally established our nonprofit, because we've been doing this kind of work for many years without the official legal paperwork of a 501c3. So our 501c3, which is Everyday Mission, it is only about 7 years old. So it's starting to get some legs on it, you know? And we really had the mandate that half of the funds that come in go back out to the nations. So we're discipling and we're working with all sorts of organizations all over the world. The other half we are keeping within our purview, and we are saving, because right now we rent spaces or we meet in homes. We don't have our own property, but we know at some point we are going to have our own space, and it will be something that is self-sustaining. So we'll have some kind of business component with it. It's just not going to be a church building that sits there and is just used and funded on donations, right? Tithes and offerings. It's going to be a space that is fully used, but also building income as well. So we knew we needed to save money. Well, I don't want to put money in a savings account at the bank and it makes 1%. That's the first thing. And the second thing, I already have this goal of making sure I can distribute millions of dollars when I die. So I thought, well, let's just combine the two. And while we're capitalizing and saving money, we're just throwing all of that money into the policies for the nonprofit. And it's just cooking away. And we're looking at real estate, looking at things, because when the right door opens up, I'll just go write a check and then we will just pay ourselves back.
That's awesome.
It is awesome.
I'm telling you. I remember conversations that, what was the, how do you do that? How do you get the 501c3 involved? How do you involve the nonprofit? And that's kind of the why, so you can give millions away and you're retaining half to build and own and to make it as perpetual as possible, right? And self-sustaining. And then the how is kind of the ownership of the policies, the insurability, who's insurable, where do the premiums come from? Can you get it all past the underwriters? But we didn't have any. I don't recall any difficulty with any of that, getting the policies in place. And
there's something, whoever's insurable within the nonprofit organization, you have to be an asset to the organization, as in you have to have been putting your own money into the organization over a certain amount of time. So if you died and were no longer part of that organization, the organization would suffer. That's how you're able to. So you're not just going to be on a board of some nonprofit and not be financially contributing and think this system will work. You've got to have skin in the game.
Yeah. So there has to be an insurable interest, and is what the industry calls that. And so y'all didn't start the nonprofit to do life insurance and commingle all the tax-free benefits of life insurance and nonprofits or trust and all that, which, you can do all that, but it's a legitimate nonprofit with legitimate cash flows that are historic. The board members take salary, or they have a certain amount of time that they've been are participating in the nonprofit. I mean, they're just legitimate activities. But that's pretty powerful, when you have a tax exempt entity, right, that owns life insurance, is paying the premium, and is the beneficiaries, and then you know, a modified endowment contract within the life insurance industry, a life insurance policy just, you know, is deemed to move from insurance to an investment. Therefore, the tax treatment of a policy could change if certain things occur. Anyway, right. That becomes a modified endowment contract. Well, a nonprofit can own a modified endowment contract because they're a tax exempt entity. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just pointing that out. There's so many things that you can do. And I believe that the infinite banking concept, you know, Nelson's work can change a family's direction for generations. No question. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's worth it.
You have to be disciplined. Right.
But it's, yeah. And then, you know, if God's people, if the churches would like open their mind or just, make an attempt to be exposed to it, you can change congregations for generations. I mean, it's like, it's very powerful what could be done. And you don't have to start, in my humble opinion, you know, with great big, you know, the church that has $20,000 a month income and cash flows or $120,000 a month in tithes. I mean, you don't have to start with these startling numbers. You can just start, right?
Yeah.
With the employees, the board members, because whatever the church does or the nonprofit does, it's got to be presented before the board, and the board's got to be
Exactly. There's nothing sneaky or hidden about it. It's just wisdom. Mm-hmm. And it's creating a vehicle or a container so that God's people can be the head and not the tail. I don't want to be beholden to banks. If I am beholden to bank, I am going to have a great deal. I'm going to be able to use the income in the policy to get the deal going. Then I'm going to refinance the deal, pull money back out, pay my policy off, and have that thing, the rent, the income, the business coming from it, sustaining it, paying for it, and then it's a net. Everyone wins.
The banker is put on a timeline, right? Whether you could do the whole deal, whatever it is,
right,
with policies, or you can't. You get the best terms because you have capital that you can get. But then, just like you said, you know, he's on a limited timeline. You know, it's a matter of time before the banker's just not part of the equation.
Right.
You know.
Well, I always want to be a part of the equation when I'm the banker.
Of course.
Right. I just need to build. I just need to keep capitalizing, you know, so that little nest egg keeps growing. So then the deal can get simpler and faster and all of those things, you know.
Yeah. More control. I should just say the third party lender is on a timeline, you know, on their way out. Of the deal. Of the
it was so interesting because my son said to me the other day, he's like, Mom, you know how we borrow money from ourselves, from our bank, right? And I said, yeah. And he said, explain to me how that works again, because my friend's dad wants to know about it. And so it was just a sweet thing because he just used his policy to do his car. And so that it was just fun for him to learn how to do it and then, you know, share with a friend's dad the power in it.
Yeah. I mean, the young person today that can control the banking function as early as automobiles, I mean, it's a different world. They would grow up in a different world than we did, you know, completely different experiences. And it's very powerful. Well, so what do you,
and then if they're able to go out and hustle and make a few thousand dollars, right? Yeah. I'm just like, hey, do you want to throw it into your policy so you never lose it? And normally they're like, yep. And they just hand it over and we just dump it right in. So it's just them understanding like, hey, you could spend to your desires and never get it back, or you could throw it in here and use it wisely.
Yep. And buy what you want and then repay the loans, recapitalizing your system to do it again. You know, and that really does narrow down what you want to buy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It does. So you have children, one's going to get married, he's already financed a car. Is there a potential for continuing education with your children?
Possibly.
Are they going to go to college or
no? Yeah, they're in, well, my oldest has graduated. My younger two are still in college.
Okay.
So yeah, we have not used it yet because we're still capitalizing. So we haven't used, I mean, we could have. If I would have started when they were more like 16, I would have been ready to just take college on with it. But it's taken me a little bit longer to get to a place where there was enough to borrow. But yeah, I mean, it's just infinite. You can use it for anything that you would finance anywhere else. You just finance it with yourself and then pay yourself back 10% interest.
I get it. I was talking to a lady yesterday. Her son like pays as much premium as the husband or his dad does. And anyway, they were all at dinner, and the dad found out how much the son was paying in premium, and they're paying about the same amount. And the dad's like, "Oh my gosh, I'm not paying enough in premium." It was an interesting story. Probably should have the whole conversation to, make it more impressive. I was so impressed. I was listening to the story, and just the dad eyes, his eyebrows raised, and it's like my son, who's a young man, young early 20s, I believe, paying as much premium as he is and making a tremendous amount less than the father. It was just, I think it convicted the dad a little bit that, he's not really paying what he
And then
wants.
you should, if you're at the most expensive time, I'm at the most expensive time in my life where all my kids are in college and all of these things. So we've learned to live with a certain amount of income because we're paying for all these things. Well, I'm just not going to stop living at this type of income. So as the kids fall off the payroll, all that money just goes into the policies. It just, so I'll just keep living like this and it'll just snowball more and more
A
into the
windfall.
policies.
You got a windfall's coming, all right? So what do y'all do y'all plan on just doing, just in addition to that, when the windfalls come in, you're going to continue capitalizing, living the way you live, which, you pretty much get away to live, you get to live the way you want to live. And when you get into passive income or retirement, quote unquote, the way you live doesn't change. You're not going to act one way for 30 years, 40 years, and then just because you're not actively producing or productive, working, you're not going to just all of a sudden go triple your expenses. You're just not going to change the way you live. So you got a wedding in the future. Do you have any real estate deals going on, or you're just going to keep doing that until, what's your future look like? Amber is what I'm kind of getting
Oh
at.
my goodness. I'm trying to be faithful to the day. I am right in the middle of still working through my deal in Georgia. So that is, when you develop land, it's a long game. It takes several years to go from raw dirt to something that has infrastructure and rentable cabins and those kinds of things. And different regions of the earth work different on different time systems. So, I'm in South Florida, and when I build something, I can do it very quickly. And in Georgia, it's a whole other ball of wax. So, different timeline. So, but as those roll off, then, the way that I do it is I'm constantly praying and saying, God, you give me the opportunity to build wealth. So you bring the right opportunity along. And so I'm just waiting. When something comes along and it smells a little bit like similarly to things the Lord has done before, then I look at it a little more deeply. And if I'm not in a hurry, I'm not, there's no striving in it. You're just waiting to see the next great thing that comes along. All of my deals, literally, the Lord just sovereignly did.
Wow. So you and so that's a path you're going to continue. I mean, your relationship with God is just going to continue and grow and get stronger. But I mean, there's no like timeline in your mind, I'm going to do something different in 15 years or 5 years or 10 years. You're just going to live in the day and do what you've
You
been
mean do
doing.
something different, like retire, or is that one?
Quit doing real estate,
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll diversify a little bit. I think the next thing that I would do is probably look towards buying more of a turnkey business, something that is a little bit more optimizable. I might just cool it on real estate for a little bit. You need to be diversified. You need to have businesses. You need to have, land. rental properties.
I got you. So you're just open to opportunities as they come.
I am open to opportunities. The numbers work. Not every opportunity is a good one. You got to be able to say no to something. Know how to work the numbers. That's for sure.
That's a fact. Well, what does the everyday mission do? You know, what does that the future look like there? What do y'all do? And then what does the future look like?
Well, we actively raise up leaders, teach them, train them, send them out, and plant them. So in South Florida, we're a network of micro churches and micro missions. So we need a hub. We need a place where people can gather. But the lion's share of the discipleship work that's happening is happening online or person to person over coffee, or we're meeting in homes. But there are opportunities where we need to get together in a larger space. And we also want to be a voice in the community that's creating locations. You know, it's like, why does Starbucks get to have the place where everyone gets to have their meetings? You know, why can't I offer that? You know, so it's just the idea of creating a space that is that honors the Lord, that creates business, that creates income. Because ultimately, God's people we're supposed to be using wealth to disciple nations. What's happening right now in church culture is wealth is being used to build buildings and then bigger and bigger and bigger buildings with bigger and bigger programs that may or may not be creating mature disciples. And so can we flip the script on that? Can we actually see God's people mature, not just in their spiritual growth, but in their economic understanding of how money works, so that we can actually have a systematic plan of how to use wealth to disciple nations? That's the biblical mandate, right? So one of the things that I've started in, like I said, in Everyday Mission is it's a network of micro churches and micro missions. So I've started a micro mission and it's called Abraham's Guild. It's specifically for business leaders. It's specifically for business leaders who want to learn how to build business from heaven down so that we're the head and not the tail, that we're using kingdom principles, we're using biblical principles, we're activating the concept of a first fruit offering, which is different than tithes. A first fruit offering is a smaller something that's done in faith to see a harvest that's produced. And then we're creating systems where right now we're working in El Salvador, where we're adopting villages and seeing them become sustainable. And then, for instance, one of the villages we're working in right now, we're building them a greenhouse that actually creates economy for them. Because of the political situation in that nation, all of the men have been sent to prison. So it's many single moms that have no income. So we're creating this scenario where they're in their village, they have a greenhouse that they're going to grow things and then take it to market and sell them. So they're getting business, they're receiving income. So it's not like a handout, it's a hand up. And in this way, we're seeing the presence of God rest in a territory, and we're seeing the gospel be able to be preached because we're creating this environment that's sustainable for everybody.
I got you. So you'll continue to do that type of work, and then with the hub, make some kind of profitable cash flow so it's not just supported strictly by donations.
I would love for it not to be supported by donations at all. I would like it to fully support itself.
I got you. Well, and so you... y'all have been doing that for some time. You were doing that. You were doing real estate and you know, learning and being more open about how money really works. I mean, all that was really before you was exposed to the infinite banking concept. Is that about right?
Right, right. I was learning all of these ideas. And so then when infinite banking came into play, it just put all the pieces together and started to accelerate everything.
Brought a little clarity perfect. Well, what else would you like to share with us? Because, you know, and I think I've told you that when I discovered the infinite bank concept about 20 years ago or so, you just didn't hear about it. You didn't hear about the idea, the fact that you could become your own banker, control the banking function, or have any idea what that really meant. You might hear an advertisement on the radio, but to learn you know, what the infinite banking concept really is. You know, and you really had to go find where Nelson might have been speaking, given a 10-hour right. presentation. It was just not that prevalent. Now, today online, it's a lot more prevalent now. You know, no question about that. But in my mind, if I could go back 20 years and I could have heard other people, just genuine salt of the earth people talking about it, you know, I think I would have benefited greatly. And, you know, I'm a slow learner. I might have had to hear a lot of it, but that's kind of the thinking behind the origins of this, you know, Banking with Life podcast, the opportunity for real people to share their experiences with people that may be practicing the infinite banking concept or maybe not, or maybe they're newly exposed
thinking about it. Yeah. Wanting to see how real people do it. Yeah. Well, I think it's a universal principle. If your thinking is not right, your life's not right. And if your money's not right, your life's not right. And so any way you slice it, whoever comes across this podcast has an opportunity to be confronted with the reality of those two things. How are you thinking about your life? And how are you thinking about your money? Because a lot of people will either live in a victim mentality or grumble and complain about the way things are in the economy, when the truth is, in God's kingdom, we're perfectly safe. And we should have the wisdom and the ability, regardless of, you know, anything, to succeed, advance, and overcome. That's just how it works.
I got you. And I agree. Okay. Well, it's about a half hour, a little over half hour. So I'm good to wrap it up if you are. And, and I just want to thank you for taking your time. I know you're busy to just sit down and share with us. And I appreciate you very much for doing that. I'm excited for y'all and everything that y'all are doing, which is a lot, you know, not only just in the real estate world as a family, and then as a nonprofit, the work that's going on there, that's all very cool. And I think it's rare whenever people can actually integrate the infinite banking concept into nonprofits and that activity.
Yes,
and
I think more people need to think about doing it.
Because
it's really powerful, especially for like newer nonprofits that are that have a very viable mission and they have surplus funds. Why would you put them in a 1% savings account at the bank or even a 3% or 4% money market? I just, you know what I mean? Like, just think a little bit outside of your lifetime and see what's possible. Ask God to give you wisdom, but it's such a powerful tool.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. You know, Nelson used to say when he would do his 10-hour seminar, you know, he would say, look at any town or any city that's, you know, 3,500 to 10,000 to 30,000. And back when they had newspapers, and he said, just go look at the obituary and see how many people graduate. You know, if there was a group that understood the infinite banking concept, you know, we're all going to graduate. Nobody's getting out of here alive. You know, there's three that I know of and neither one of us are going to be the fourth. Right. So if you look at organizations, their board members, their employees, they all come and go. Maybe they stay a long time, but they don't stay there forever, whether they go spend their time elsewhere or they graduate. And if you had an organization with 3, 4, 5, 10, or 15 individual lives that the entity has an insurable interest in, not only can it benefit from the cash flows, right, controlling the banking function, because you're going to buy the buses, you're going to build the buildings, you're going to support the missionaries, you're going to do what you're called to do anyway. And all of that takes capital and cash flows. When you can integrate and adopt the idea of becoming your own banker, integrate the infinite banking concept into that, you profit from that. But then everybody that has that is participating that in that endeavor, we're all going to graduate. And then that money comes in tax-free to the entity. And then it's even, a lot of people don't understand donors. So if I was a donor to your organization,
Right.
And I'm faithful and I'm diligent and I continually, I have a history of donating to a nonprofit, right? Say whatever it is, $10,000 a year. It could be $1,000 a year, $5,000. I'm not trying to put numbers out there.
Right.
But if I'm gifting $10,000, I'm donating $10,000 to you and I graduate.
Yes.
That creates a loss to the entity.
Yeah.
Right. Because you're not going to get the $10,000 gift anymore.
Yeah.
So there's an insurable interest there if you can document my history of giving. And it's not that complicated. So not only are then the directors, the XO, the board members, there's an insurable interest that the entity has in them. The entity also has an insurable interest in the donors.
I mean,
now you're talking, and I get we're all limited in cash flows, but the talk about the infinite of that and then the continuation of that, you know, do you want the entity to exist, you know, for the next 50 years, 60 years? And I don't know, you know,
right
on your.
Hey, if Everyday Mission, its lifespan is only going to last my lifetime, right? It still means, you know, if there isn't anyone that's raised up and there isn't anyone suitable to take it on, those types of things, I can still choose the other nonprofit I wanted to go to. So somebody's going to win when I graduate, and it's going to be fun to see who it is.
Yeah. And the entity can win up until that time.
Yeah.
It's pretty powerful. So, okay. What else, young lady?
I think that's it. Build a legacy. Watch someone else in Nash's stuff. Sometimes I just listen to his documentary again because it's fun. I'm like, yes, I love this guy. I can't wait to.
And I think you're referring to This Is Nelson at the Nelson Nash Institute. That documentary is available.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, listen.
Just learn good, sound economics. Most Americans are dreadfully undereducated on how money works. They just don't know. They don't understand debt. They don't understand. I mean, we need to do better.
I get it. And then it can be overwhelming and they don't want to, you know, they feel like I can't, you know, no one else is doing it, or it's like, it's just overwhelming to me. So I'm just going to keep doing what I know to do and not realize how much better they could do if they did something different. And I agree with you now. And I firmly believe, and whenever you implement the infinite banking concept into your life, into your cash flows, you know, you're saving. I like what you said earlier. You know, there's two things that it does. You know, it creates a discipline of saving, and then you win two ways, right? And then you get out of debt and you control the debt. Well, that's the fundamental problem in America today. We don't have enough capital. You know, we don't have the discipline to even decide what method we're going to engage in to accumulate capital, right? And then get out of debt. Those are two very fundamental things. And I believe when you implement the infinite banking concept into your life, that, and not that it's difficult, because it's not difficult. It is counterintuitive. It's the opposite of what you're told to do with your money, but it's not difficult. And once you do that, and then you experience the result of doing that, you look up in 2 or 3 years or 18 months, whatever it is, and you look at the cash value that you have available to collateralize, and most people are shocked, even though they've looked at the illustrations, you know, humpteen times for the past 2 years. It's like, wow, right. I can go finance a car. I can control the next real estate deal. And it's like, yes, you can. And that is a result of the discipline of paying premiums, capital formation. And but when you implement this, it does increase the discipline. You know, the every opportunity that presents itself is not really an opportunity, or not to the level that you want to engage in, right?
It's like the person who has the money wins. So in business deals, the investor is the one who's getting the payout. So you can work like an Egyptian slave and make hardly anything, and the project makes all this money and it all goes to the investors. Well, why don't you just set yourself up that you become the investor?
All right. Before they take your straw away. You know, it's like, I'm telling you.
Yep.
No, I'm all in. I can't wait to buy another policy. All right. Well, thank you, Amber. You're just, like I said, I'm appreciative for you to, you know, share your time with us.
It's been fun. Thank you.
Y'all are knocking it out of the park from my perspective, you know.
It was so fun when I was able to connect with you and really just see the pathway forward. And I'm always grateful whenever I have an idea, I can just call the office and say, hey, I just need to talk to James real quick because I'm doing something and I just want a couple eyes on it to make sure that I'm not going south. So I do that often. I'll give you a call and run things past you.
I enjoy those calls. You know, I learn from my friends and my clients just like everybody else, but you know, I enjoy those calls. You know, I got to share my, you know, thoughts and y'all are creative. I mean, you, most of you people listen, God's people are creative. And it's like, my gosh, yeah. And this, I get to experience that, a certain amount of that creativity with all the creative things that y'all are doing. And it's exciting. You know, and the typical financial world does not think like this, you know, because right. I know that you can sit down, you can face a decision. Here's all of the options. You've got the financial professional, whatever, and I'm not disparaging any of them, no disrespect, but they're all pretty much patent answers. They don't think like a banker. They don't think of controlling right. the banking function. They don't think, they don't know. I mean, they're right. not aware of the benefits of, you know, why should you put money over here instead of money over here? And how long should it be there? And should you use this money in that deal or no? And why shouldn't you? And if you should, why should you? I love those calls every day.
Yeah.
You know, so thanks for calling me whenever you're in those situations. Okay.
Yes. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. You come back anytime and, you know, you have a great rest of your day and great week ahead. Okay.
You too. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Amber. Bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.